It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Good evening. Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. And now it's time for another episode of Poetry Corner with your old pal, Bob. Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, technically, this is a song, but I'm going to sing it like Rex Harrison. Not that my voice will sound like Rex Harrison. I just mean that when he sang a song, he never really sang. Okay, but it will be a familiar one. When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember to blame Donald Trump, and then I don't feel so bad. Yes, Donald Trump's been indicted for every offense that's ever existed in the face of history. If it's in the books, they indicted him for it. I think they may have forgotten to prosecute him for not helping an old lady cross the street when he was in the Boy Scouts. But here to talk about it, Epic Times columnist, say hello to Mike Friedenberg.
Bob, thank you. And all I could say is he's a bad, bad man.
Yeah. Bad. And Joe Biden is so much better. Joe Biden is such a wonderful president.
Orange man bad. Just remember that. Okay. Orange man bad. Okay. Well, I say that with affection because over the years that I've seen Donald Trump running, I have to say I have gained some affection for the guy. I truly have.
We have literally historically gone from the best president we ever had to the worst we have ever had.
Not that he is perfect. He's not. And there's people that spend the entire week in their entire life highlighting any of the flaws he has. But he did something I don't think any other candidate could have done. He won in 2016. I believe he won in 2020. And nobody would have gotten that wall built as far as he did. I don't think anybody would have even survived those 4 years in the office, the 4 years he was there. Just the vicious, nonstop assault he was under is just amazing. So he's a tough guy. And I do respect that. And I'm going to be talking a little bit about what's been going on with President Trump a little bit. But first, I want to talk about a very important issue that could affect the outcome of the election. And that's the life issue, the abortion issue. And in the presidential primary debate they had, the one that did not have Donald Trump, you know, in Wisconsin, Milwaukee, one of the issues that was front and center was abortion.
I didn't watch the debate, but I'm just betting that the way they phrased the question is, do you stand by a woman's right to choose? This was Fox. Maybe they phrased it a little better.
I wouldn't
better.
Put it that way. I'm concerned. Now, I've been involved with various aspects of the life issue, compassion, pregnancy care centers, pro-life politics, right to life, all that stuff. I guess for over 40 years now, since I was in college, you know, at Santa Barbara. So I think I know the pro-life community pretty good. What I'm going to express is my view on this. And there's people that are awesome people that might disagree with me, but I'm going to give my viewpoint on this. People that are very strongly pro-life, but I'm going to give my viewpoint on this now anyway, because I think that we sometimes have to be shrewd and have to be smart about how we do things.
In the way we deliver it, but not in compromising the message itself.
Right. So here's the thing is, right now there's a big push. Senator Lindsey Graham put forth legislation called Protecting Pain-Capable Unborn Children from Late-Term Abortion. So this would be, at the national level, put into an effect a 15-week ban on abortion. So remember, it's got the word ban on it. The fact is, though, that at 15 weeks, 94% of all abortions are performed at 15 weeks or before. 94%. So I have to ask myself is, at the national level, what is the value of this? We're basically locking into place 94% of the abortions. Yes, there are some abortions, the 6% that take place past that point, which I do think that we should be working on, but it took us 50 years 50 years from 1973 till, you know, Donald Trump. We just recently got the Roe v. Wade overturned. So, and now we have it at the state level. So for the first time, we can actually really get some real things done at the state level. Now, to be frank, we've had some setbacks at the state level because some of the stuff we thought would be easy to pass, I believe, for example, in Ohio, it's looking
they tried to change their constitution.
It's not looking good. And there's some things there, but we need to fight at the state level. Right now, going into 2024, to say that this is an important election, I don't think we can overstate just how important this election is. And I believe that Donald Trump is poised to win this election. But let's be honest, by removing Roe v. Wade and removing abortion rights from the protection that was offered by Roe v. Wade, we changed the dynamics politically on abortion. In the past, a woman could say, yeah, I kind of like the idea of lower taxes. Yeah, I kind of like business regulations reduced a bit. Yeah, I think the environmentalism is just a bit too extreme, and my abortion rights are protected. So yeah, I'll vote Republican. There are going to be some percentage of women and men who have that kind of mindset. Okay, so now that it's now open and the states can decide it, it does change the dynamics.
So you're saying we have enough of a victory for now.
Well,
why base the whole election on there's so many other issues?
I'm not saying to give up on it. What I'm saying is we have the opportunity to start to build support at the state levels and to win at the state levels.
Well, and if we don't get the Democrats out of office, and it's not going to matter. They're going to have abortions on steroids. So,
well, okay, and that's right. But here's the thing that it just scares me. Is if we're talking about the ability to determine the life issue at the national level with a 15-week ban, aren't we basically implicitly saying, hey, at the national level, you can pass pro-abortion legislation? By the way, once again, the 15-week ban, remember, 94% of all abortions. So I'm looking at this, and then what we do is we elevate that issue. When we have all these other issues, the destruction of our legal system, the voting fraud, the fraud in voting and ballots. And now we are now giving the Democrats an issue that Republicans want to ban. The fact that it's 94% of the abortions are being permitted won't be part of the dialogue. So I'm very concerned about it as putting this up front as an issue. And I believe it should be a national issue. Ultimately, it should be. But what it should be a national issue is that when we look throughout the nation and we've done our work and we have enough support from all the states and all the state legislatures to pass a constitutional initiative that protects the right to life, that's the way to do it, I believe. I think just national legislation is not going to be the way to do it.
So you're saying let's do what we can when we can, and let's look at the tyranny of the moment right now.
And continue to work at the state levels, continue to try to change heart and minds here, and pass the legislation to protect life. For example, Ron DeSantis, Governor DeSantis, signed a bill 6 weeks protecting. Now, that does protect a lot of unborn. Now it's still being held up in the courts. And then there's another piece of legislation passed that was 15 weeks, and even that's being held up in the courts. So regardless how reasonable it is, for example, in California here, why not put something on the ballot that says, let's get people to start thinking about these unborn babies as being human beings by late-term abortion, things that we can actually win. And in the states that we can win 6 weeks, we do that. In the states we can win there. But the national piece of legislation basically says, hey, if you get the Democrats in control again in the House and the Senate and the president, go ahead, because we are now saying that you can pass and destroy the state's rights. Remember, this would be federal legislation overriding state legislation. Even if it has an exception in it that says, well, you have a more strict term, we'll allow you to keep it. The opposite could happen.
Well, I certainly agree that we should be more prudent, just so long as we don't go as far as Sean Hannity, who recently, I think, made a disgraceful comment. We need to go back to the saying of Bill Clinton to make abortion safe, rare, and legal. I did not think I'd live to see the day when Sean. And then it was the old, oh, although personally, I'm against abortion. That's no different than what the Democratic platform has been.
Of course. And I don't agree with that. But fight it at the state level.
We're not compromising the issue. We're just saying, let's do what we can when
we can. We took 50 years to get it back to the states.
And a lot of people don't understand that that's what the overturning of Roe v. Wade did. It just pushed it back to the states. It did not make it against the law in the entire country.
We're not certain what the Supreme Court would do with it. But if the Supreme Court says all of a sudden abortion could be decided by legislation at the national level. Now, I'd like to think that we're going to have a Republican House and a Republican Senate and a Republican
president. But if we lose the election, the Democrats could stack that court and then abortion will be the law of the land endorsed by a new Supreme Court.
Well, that's, Bob.
That's the danger.
Exactly. That was one of my other points I had down here. So let's say we managed to energize enough Democrats to not win the presidency in 2024. Two, Alito. We lose Alito and we lose Thomas. Both of them are elderly. We lose them And all said, it's a 5-4 pro-abortion majority.
Well, and we don't even have to lose them if the Democrats get in there and stack the court, because the Constitution doesn't tell us how many justices we have to have.
But even without that, we have two guys in their late 70s now, heading toward late 70s. What, are they going to be around through the end of 2028? Let's say we get a Democrat back. And by the way, I don't think it'll be Biden, but regardless, whoever get back in there in 2024, we get a Democrat in there. There's a good chance.
It doesn't matter who it would be. It would be a nightmare. What the Democratic Party stands for right now, it would be a nightmare.
So then we lose. Then once again, we lose the Supreme Court. They're not going to spend a millisecond deciding to overturn the past ruling. And they'll probably come back with an even more harsh ruling than Roe v. Wade on what the Constitution supposedly says. So I'm worried about it. I think that we need to focus on the state level. And I think this idea that it's a litmus test for a Republican candidate to be considered pro-life, that they do or do not support this ban that locks in 94% of abortions, that's not a litmus test for me. The 6-week, 90%+ of the abortions take place after 6 weeks. I mean, it's very high. So that's actually something doing something. But the 15 weeks, I don't think we ought to have a litmus test for it. Donald Trump right now is saying he's thinking about it. Vivek Ramaswamy said absolutely not. He said it's a state-level issue. And I agree with him with the caveat that it's a state-level issue until we can win at the national level for sure. And if we can win for sure, that means a constitutional amendment. That's the only way to do it. In my opinion, it needs to be a constitutional amendment. Because you can't count on it.
You can't keep having to go back and forth every 4 years.
If the Supreme Court keeps reinterpreting what's in the Constitution, yeah, then that's the way to do it. You need, as a congressman, to say it's here.
Of course, it could be a constitutional amendment, and they could go and reinterpret that amendment, too.
So. It's harder. We can only do what we can do.
Yeah,
so that's
exactly
all I got to say about that for
okay.
me. I'm just
going
to say is I'm concerned. I do understand people, great people, smart people, people that have been fighting this issue for a long time, might disagree with what I'm saying, but I really believe right now we're hanging by our nails. We have to win this 2024 election, and giving the Democrats an issue to galvanize around. It won't be about 94% of the abortions are still allowed. It's going to be, it's a ban. The Republicans want a ban. 15 weeks now, 6 weeks later at a national.
Of course. And they'll only talk about women that have been raped and the abortions over those issues.
So from my perspective of your actions producing results that protect life, if you're doing actions that end up not protecting life, well, there's an old saying about intent. The road to some place is filled with good intentions.
The road to hell is paved with good intentions.
So I'm just saying, really think about that. So something I do want to slip into is that I think it's really, really cool is that when Trump went to Fulton County to be arrested and his mugshot taken, lining the streets of some of the toughest places in Atlanta was
a lot of African Americans.
Hundreds and hundreds of African Americans.
Yeah, which you don't hear about in the mainstream media, of course.
They had signs calling themselves Blacks for Trump. And there was another sign that has something for Trump that I can't say because I'm a white guy.
Yeah, okay.
But it was out there.
I think I know what you mean, Mike.
All right. So they were out there.
But of course, now the left will say these aren't really black people. These are really white supremacists.
Well, they were black people.
Yeah. Well, of course they were.
Then
that's not the way the left will look at it.
Just as a positive word of encouragement, Candace Owens took a ton. She went out to social media and took a bunch of social media posts afterwards from, well, it was basically all black men. But we were talking black men that they didn't look like they were from the preppy wing of, you know, black men from the streets and everywhere, black men, working class, black men on the streets, coming out and just blowing up and supporting for Trump. I mean, just, yeah, Trump's my man. Trump 2024, Trump 2028, Trump for life, Trump for king. And you had people working class. One of the guy, a really burly black guy, he said his sister knew Fannie Willis, the Georgia prosecutor, said some bad things about her and said, yeah, I'm voting for Trump. So I believe that it's interesting. In 2016, Trump did 20% better with the black community, Mitt Romney. In 2020, he did 20% better than he did in 2016. I believe, and you look at the polling, he's going to blow through the 20%. He's going to do a lot better than he did in 2020. And it shows up everywhere, every demographic.
Well, God bless Candace Owens. One of the Republicans would be smart to put her on the VP ticket. Hey, Mike, no, think about it. Vice president. And this time it would not be one that's a blithering idiot like the one we've had the last couple of years.
That could be a very good move. I do not know. Speaking of vice presidential candidates, somebody I believe who is running for vice president, though they say they're not, is Vivek Ramaswamy.
I more or less like this guy. What are your feelings about him?
I think that the guy is super bright. I mean, off the charts bright. Well, obviously he's
successful. He's also likable. Not that that should matter, because Trump, I know, is not considered likable, and I still think he's a good president, but it does help. It does help.
He is likable. He's able to laugh when people are attacking him. He is running a bit to the right of Donald Trump, actually, interestingly enough, in my opinion, a bit to the
Trump
right.
Trump hasn't said much about the transgender stuff, has he?
Vivek's been more vocal about that. He's also been very vocal about the role of fathers in the family, which I 100% agree with. That is the, from what I could see looking at, and there's a lot of African-Americans that agree with me on this, that is the number one issue facing the Black community right now.
Well, even Obama said that once upon a time. He kind of veered away from it later.
Yeah, he did. So he's talking about the right things. Not only is he having a sharp IQ, but he's shrewd enough that he's absolutely going out of his way not to alienate the Trump voters. Now, with that said, I would say there's no way could Vivek Ramaswamy get out the Trump voters this cycle, but he wouldn't. He's not alienating them.
Maybe he could take him on as a VP.
Well, if he's angling for that, and it's a smart move, because with 4 years as the vice president, he might be able to build up enough Trump with those 14 to 15 million voters that only vote for Trump to get them to attach their allegiance to him.
Okay, Mike, hold that thought. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Trust the care of your children to others. It's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, joined by columnist Mike Friedenberg.
So just to finish up with Vivek, my feeling is that he probably does mean what he's saying, but he doesn't have a track record, right? And he's relatively new on the scene. So if it came down to him running for president versus a Democrat, of course I'd vote for him.
If it came down to Bart Simpson versus a Democrat, I would vote for them.
Right. Actually, that's true. But I really think that he could be a good vice presidential candidate, and that would do him well, because then he could establish his bona fides to show the Trump voters that he really is real. Now, I mentioned the term Trump voters, and I cannot emphasize how important this is going into this election cycle. Because
the word GOP and Trump voters is not synonymous.
Well, definitely not. And in 2022, we had a big disappointment. Now, there was a number of reasons for that, and people were talking about...
Not the least of which was a lot of cheating, of course.
Well, I think there was a very intelligent, very concerted, targeted ballot fraud operations built around the ballot harvesting and the vote-by-mail stuff that the Democrats were able to execute in 2022. However, if Trump had been on the ballot in 22, for example, he was on the ballot, we would have won the governorship in Wisconsin. You know, Ron Johnson won by 1 point, won by 4 or 5 points. We would have had a red wave in the cycle. And the reason I'm saying this is there is a block of voters, and it's sad to say, but you cannot get them to come out for anybody but Donald Trump. They don't believe in the Republican Party. They think they're a bunch of slimy politicians. They will not come out.
Well, I'm starting to lean that way myself, although I'm still willing to vote for the lesser of two evils.
Right. And that's Richard Barris, the People's Pundit, who's one of the better pollsters out there, who really dives into this, estimates, I think he saw an estimate of something like 14 million of these voters. That is huge. And it's going to be bigger this time around. And I know that there's been a lot of discouragement. There was discouragement around 2022. There's discouragement around 2020. And this has started to metastasize that people are saying, oh, what's the point of voting? They're just going to cheat anyway. And really, we've got to combat that because there's not an infinite ability of the Democrats to vote. And you can start to see some statistics on this. Let me explain. When Obama won in 2012, he won, I believe, about 600 counties out of 3,000. So the Republicans won about over 2,000 counties. When Trump won in 2016, he won well over 2,000 counties. And I think Hillary Clinton won about 450 counties, something like that. So it was like Trump 2,400 counties, Hillary Clinton 400 something odd counties. And according to the numbers, if you add up all the votes from all the states, which some people call the popular vote, which I don't because there is no such thing as the popular vote, you saw her getting more votes than Obama did in 2012 with less counties. Then you get to a Biden with 300 counties and blowing out, getting the most votes in history, 81 million ballots. I'm going to call them ballots because I don't believe they were votes. I believe there was an awful lot of cheating going on there, a lot of ballot stuffing. So the point is they're having to get squeezed more and more votes out of these blue counties, more and more votes out of these blue cities. And it's getting harder and harder to get more votes out of them. And in 2022, they were trying to do the ballot harvesting and the ballot cheating in Maricopa County, the Democrats, and they weren't able to do enough. They did all their efforts, they weren't able to do enough. So finally on election day, they had to sabotage the election machines. So this ability to cheat is not infinite. And with the kind of voter turnout we're going to see in 2024, I believe, just as in 2016, I believe that Donald Trump can swamp their ability to cheat. Literally just swamp it. That plus Republicans doing some select ballot harvesting where it makes sense, plus being tougher on, for example, the Zuckerbucks. He spent over $1 billion to coordinate with local elected Democrat election officials to become part of the official organization to pull out the Democrat vote. I think we could shut down a lot of that. Now, that's why we want Trump on the ballot, because in states like Wisconsin, for example, you look at the state in Wisconsin with Romney, a blue state, light blue counties, just almost entirely blue. Then along comes Trump in 2016, it becomes red. Even 2022, it stayed red because despite the statewide races, you're barely losing the governorship in 2022. And there's still those counties that have been activated by Trump that still stayed red. And they still picked up and got a supermajority in one of the houses. So the state level races still did well in 2022. But let's talk about Ohio. Ohio was a blue state in 2012. Trump, over his two runs, turned it to a solid. In fact, he did better there because they actually had election integrity provisions in 2020. He did better there in 2020 than in 2016. So my point is that when Trump's on the ballot, states that were blue become red. Now, polling by Richard Barris, People's Pundit, by the way, you can find him on YouTube. Just look up the People's Pundit, Richard Barris, and you can find he does very good analysis. But if Trump's not on the ballot, Ohio becomes competitive. If Trump's not on the ballot, Wisconsin's no longer competitive. It becomes a blue state again. If Trump's not on the ballot, Michigan's not a competitive state. If Trump's not on the ballot, Arizona's not a competitive state. So this talk, this crazy talk about somebody else other than the Trump on the ballot, I believe from an analysis of the patterns and that the huge demographic shifts that are voting for him. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Trump-only vote and what Richard Barris calls the Trump or bust vote. He has found in some states up to 27% of the people saying, hey, Trump's not on the ballot. I'm either not going to vote or a large number of like 20%, up to 20%, will just write his name on the ballot. That means they're not going to vote for DeSantis. They're not going to vote for anybody else that happens to be on the ballot. They're only going to vote for Trump. People are sick of the same old Republicans saying they're going to do something. And now,
and then they never do it.
And they never do it. So is it going to be 27% in some of the states? Maybe it'll only be 20%, maybe only 15%. But it's a devastating number of Trump-only voters. And we have to keep that in mind. With Trump on the ballot, I think we cream the Democrats in Congress. And we're really well poised for the U.S. Senate, because the U.S. Senate, every year it rotates. So you have about 33, roughly, U.S. Senate seats up every cycle. So it's 6 years. So every cycle, a third's up. So this time, we have, out of the 33 seats up, about 21 of them Democrat or independent, an independent leading Democrat, and only about 11 or 12 are Republican. So we are well poised to pick up seats in the U.S. Senate in 2024. So I really think that if we get the vote out, we do the best we can, we won't be perfect, to make it harder for the Democrats to cheat. We do in areas that make sense, because, you know, I know there was a plan in Arizona to try to make some of the ballot tracking based ballot cheating to happen in Maricopa County. But in the end, they just basically just shut down the machines. And they could still do the same things to us now, because, for example, in Michigan, remember they put the papers up on the windows so you couldn't see out of their county? We have no idea what happened there. Or in Georgia, in the middle of the night, you have the two election workers out in the middle, pull out the box. That was never explained. And we haven't got real election audits. So we need to be on our toes. We need to fight.
And we need to pray for judges with backbone and integrity, too, because
backbone.
Judges are ultimately deciding these things.
But I believe it's going to be harder for the Democrats than ever before to generate enough votes out of these blue areas. Now, they can sometimes go into areas that aren't strictly blue and still get the cheating done, but it's harder. It's riskier. Where they like to be is they like to be in the areas. They like to be in the counties, in the cities, where they control everything, where they know who the judges are, they control everybody. That's where they want to cheat. But if you get too many votes in the suburban areas, the rural areas, and other parts of the country, now they're starting to have to go into higher risk areas. And I think that's where we're looking at in this election cycle. It's be harder now. Something that my son brought up, which I thought was interesting, and they could be doing it. I don't know for sure if they're doing this, but we're talking about the huge amount of popular vote that Biden got. Well, they could also still be cheating in blue states where they're going to win anyway, but just to boost up the popular vote, right? And what's the risk?
They could at least claim they had the
no matter what, they can use that as a hammer.
Yeah, like, hey, we at least won the popular vote.
And why not do it? Because nobody can hold you accountable. You have the Democrat governor. You have the Democrat attorney general. You have the Democrat voter registrar. You have the Democrat county board of supervisors. You have Democrat everything. So why not just do some ballot stuffing there? You're still going to win anyway. There might be one this little lone Republican district that was competitive, and you may just want to crush that Republican there too. So why not just go ahead and crush them safely, right? I mean, so my point is, I think there's a lot of room for optimism. There is socioeconomic trends that are trending Republican right now. And the Hispanic vote, it's interesting. They're really latching onto President Trump. Even in Florida, by the way, let's just get this over with. DeSantis is probably more than 20 points behind Donald Trump in Florida right now. Behind Donald Trump in Florida.
Even in his own state.
Even in his own state. Then they look at the DeSantis on the ballot versus Trump. And then you just see a big drop off in how each state does. You even see a big drop in how Florida does against Biden when DeSantis is on the ballot and Trump's not on the ballot. They've done some polling on that. So I understand that there's some folks that do not like President Trump. They have a visceral dislike for them. People that are good, solid conservatives, people that I agree with on everything else. And just for them, the way things started off with President Trump, him mocking Cain, right? Cain's time in the...
Yeah, but it's unforgivable that they would allow someone like Joe Biden to come into office because they feel that way. They've got to get some perspective on this.
Or even Hillary Clinton, right? When they were out there, either not voting for... most of them, I just don't think they vote. Just didn't vote for President Trump.
They're voting against Trump's tweets, and then they're voting for infanticide and all the other hideous things.
But I'm just saying is get past, like you like to say, get past his mean tweets. Look what he's really done. Get past that.
Yeah, we're not electing Christ. We're electing a president.
And then his family, I mean, I have to say, when I was first looking at Trump, you know, when I had moved on from Scott Walker to Ted Cruz, and then realizing that Ted Cruz could not win, and then looking at Donald Trump, I looked at a lot of things. I looked at his family and I said, you know, his family, they've all turned out to be what looked like decent people. people that are functional, that aren't druggies, that aren't destroyed, their lives aren't destroyed. You've got to be doing something right.
And they seem happy. Obviously, they've had a good relationship with their upbringing.
So you've got to be doing something right there, despite some of the things he said when he thought he was off camera and some of the other things there, is it generally speaking, he's a person that believes in America and generally believes in basic general decency. He may not be the teetotaling Christian. Well, he actually is teetotaling, excuse me, but... But just saying we have to consolidate behind him. I like Ron DeSantis, but I was really, really worried about him running, how it might damage the party. I don't think it's damaged the party as much as I thought it was because he just hasn't been able to get any traction. But I do believe it's hurt himself a lot.
And he's coming out now and saying that he does believe Trump lost the 2020 election. He's just saying some politically expedient things
for
to say.
People that are sensitive, he's beginning to look much more like the establishment Republican.
Yes.
He did before.
He was a breakout politician before. He's looking like a typical politician now.
He's looking more that way, and that does not help him with the party where the mindset of the party is right now. Even more moderate Republicans are getting sick of the endless promises from the Republicans that get elected and they don't do what they're going to do. And they're looking around them. They're looking at the crime in the street. They're looking at our involvement in wars overseas, hundreds of billions of dollars that we don't have, that we're actually borrowing against their children and their grandchildren to fund wars overseas. They're looking at this thing and they are getting frustrated. So the entire party's frustrated. Obviously, the independents that are true independents are frustrated. And right now, we are very blessed that we have somebody that can connect with voters that nobody else could connect with. So that's what I'm saying is we've got to get back there. So let's just take a look here at what we're talking about here. Well, the Wall Street Journal just came out with a poll yesterday, and it basically showed at a nationwide level, President Trump with a 46-point lead over Governor Ron DeSantis. That's not competitive. I don't care what you tell me. Never in the history of Republican presidential polling has this kind of lead been overcome. Period. It's never happened.
And the fact that he's doing it from all these indictments speaks volumes. Okay, Mike, hold with me. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in three serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burn down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539, WNS Electric.
Bob Siegel's novel, Push the Winds Around, is now available in both ebook and print copies. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Talk about a good read. Have you ever thought, if only God would allow me to go back in time to right my wrongs? What if I could change those decisions I made? What would be the outcome? Would the changes make a difference? If you have ever thought about that, then this book is your challenge. The story is so good you won't want it to end. You'll see why it deserves 5 stars. Bob Siegel, you've done it again. Can't wait for the sequel. Push the Winds Around, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
We'll be right back.
Always good to be with you. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Say hello again to Mike Friedenberg.
So, Bob, as we were just saying before we took a little break there, is that poll just released. This poll comes out after the debate. Now, there was a lot of talk out there. Oh, debate's going to hurt Donald Trump. And there's some folks from the DeSantis supporters. So, yeah, we think we found a poll. Well, the poll was, you know, an internal poll, you know.
Gotta love those internal polls.
However, the Wall Street Journal poll comes out. This is taken after the debate. So it shows Trump maintaining a 46% lead. In fact, increasing his lead from the past poll over Ron DeSantis. Now, let's talk about Trump versus Biden in the general election, because there's polls we can compare this to back in 2020.
Is this going to be known as jail versus the basement this election?
Yeah, I don't know. So maybe. So right now, Trump is +2, Biden head-to-head, +2 with Cornell
See,
West.
Now, I keep hearing that Biden's ahead in the national polls.
No, he's not.
Trump.
He's not.
Okay,
no,
so
that's not.
This is just made-up stuff then?
No, actually, Trump is tied or slightly ahead even on Real Clear Politics.
Oh, that's extraordinary. That's very different than what I'm hearing.
Okay, so you can find some polls there. With Cornell West, who's the radical leftist on the ballot, Trump goes to 44 to Biden 36.
Yeah, well, let's just hope Cornell West jumps in and pulls all those votes away from Biden.
So,
yeah, that would be wonderful.
So we're looking
go
at
go Cornell. There. Go ahead, Cornell.
So let's go back to September of 2020, which would be the equivalent time we're looking at right now. Emerson had Trump down by 2 points. Emerson was actually pretty good. So there's a 4-point swing there. But we had CNN with Biden up by +10, Fox News, Biden up +10, Survey USA, Biden up +11. So my point is, none of these pollsters do a very good job of polling the Trump voters. Which, by the way, sadly, most of them did come out in 22. Let's remember that. Most of the Trump supporters, just because Trump's running around saying he tried to do it in 2018 as well, sadly, they didn't come out for as much for him there as he should have as well. They should have. They didn't come out again in 2022 to vote. Well, he wasn't on the ballot, obviously. And he wasn't on the ballot in 2018. So my point is, if we're talking about a 10-point swing in these polls, we're talking about a blowout. CNN was on the other day, and they had a guy analyzing to say, Guys, I know we're talking about the primary, but don't forget, let's look at the general. They had a poll that showed Trump up by about 2 points in the general and up in the swing states by 7 points in the swing states.
Well, and the Democrats know this, and that's why they want him in prison, right?
That's why they want him off
the ballot. You look at the timing of some of these arraignments, and one of them's on Super Tuesday, and another one's at another
time. They want him in prison. They want him off the ballot. Now, I don't want Trump in prison because I'm, you know, once
they're going to try to resurrect some kind of, I think it's some kind of insurrection law that says if he's
the 14th Amendment.
Indicted by that, then he's not even allowed to run.
It's the 14th Amendment. It's very weak.
Are they going to get away with that, Mike?
You could get a state judge, the Supreme Court judge says, well, I think the 14th Amendment applies. And they could try to do it. But I don't think it will hold up. I don't think it will hold up. I think it's so weak. And Arizona, a Democrat Attorney General said, we can't do it because there's no provisions for us to really do anything with it. And then there's another state, I forget it was, maybe it was Maine, that said they could do it. So I don't think it's going to happen, but it's something to keep your eye on. And they're desperate. They don't want Trump on the ballot. They would.
Ladies
they want
and gentlemen,
any other
doesn't
Republican.
This say something? Why do they not want him there? Why do so many Republicans and Democrats alike not want him there? Could it be that this deep state really does exist?
Yeah. So let's also, I mentioned Iowa. I didn't mention Iowa, but Iowa, people, you know, see, people are talking, Ohio is a red state now. Well, it's a red state because of Trump. It probably becomes purple without Trump running. Iowa was a blue state. Trump has made it a solid red state. But once again, that's not a sure thing if Trump's not on the ballot. And I can tell you, Pennsylvania and Michigan aren't competitive without Trump on the ballot. With them, I think we can still win them. And one of the good things about Michigan is the GOP established Republicans, fought the idea that there was any kind of election fraud in 2020. They did a big fake report on it. And they said to the Democrats throughout the country, hey, we're fraud friendly. Please come commit fraud in the key races in the state. And they did. And the Republicans lost both the House and the Senate in
the
state of Michigan.
These Republicans just are not the sharpest tools in the shed.
However, that's this cycle. I think in the 2024, the Republican Party there has moved to a more aggressive posture. I think they will pick up those House seats again, those, you know, state House seats and the state Senate seats again in 2024 and take it back again. But when you put the target back and said, please come commit fraud here, like they did in Michigan, the Democrats say, hey, yeah, we'd love to pick up a state House. And now we've got the state House and the state senate, and we've got the governor, and we can pass all sorts of onerous laws to make it harder. But I still think that in 2024, at the state level, state house levels, we're going to pick up the seats again. But it was an awful loss. That was one of the worst ones, just stabbing ourselves in the back there. So let's talk a little bit about this Trump-only vote and just how dramatic it is. So in this poll here, we have, I would vote for the party's nominee, and this is for Donald Trump. So 59% of Republicans say yes, they would. Yeah, 59.2% say yes, they would. I would consider voting for the Democrat nominee. So 3.4% of Republicans said they would consider voting for the Democrat nominee if Trump is the nominee. Okay. 3.2% said the same thing for DeSantis. So basically statistically the same. So in other words, we have 3.2% of Republicans calling themselves Republicans, they would vote for the Democrat nominee. That's a very low number, by the way, historically speaking, that's a low number. All right. I would consider voting for a third party nominee. Is a very complicated one. This is if the nominee they want does not get become the nominee. In other words, if you're a Trump supporter and he does not become the nominee, what will you do? So let me go back. So I would vote for the party's nominee. If you're a Trump supporter, you say, yeah, 58.2% of them will vote for the party nominee if Trump's not on the ballot. That's what they're saying, 58.2%. 3.4% say will consider voting Democrat. 5.2% says they will consider voting for third party. I would not vote at all, 3.5%. And 28.7% says, we'll go ahead and write his name in on the ballot. In other words, Trump's not the nominee. The party's destroyed. That's what it says. Now, if Ron DeSantis doesn't get the nomination, right? You know, which, of course, we know that's going to happen already. I mean, that's a fact. 81% of the people supporting Ron DeSantis said they will vote for the party nominee. Instead of 59% that said they would vote for the party nominee if Trump doesn't win.
Wow, this is a chasm of difference.
That's a chasm of difference. Then 3.2% said they would consider voting for the Democrat. 5.8% said they would consider for a third party. 2.4% said they would not vote at all. And 7.2% said they would write in. So 7.2% would write in Ron DeSantis if he did not get the Republican nomination. 20.5% would write in Donald Trump if he doesn't get So this is a huge difference. People are frustrated, and as good as Ron DeSantis was as governor, and I think he could still do some great things as governor for the next, you know, up through 2026.
And then maybe run for president some other time.
And he potentially could be positioned there. I mean, we need Donald Trump on the ballot. It just has to be that way. Now, this was the Trump or bust vote. This was put together in a poll by the People's Pundit. Now, other Republican pollsters are starting to poll this as well, finally. And they're beginning to say, oh, wait a second. Oh, wait a second. This idea that we can get the Trump vote without Trump is beginning to look a little shaky. In fact, it doesn't look like it's going to happen. And so,
wouldn't you have thought that would have been obvious to them a long
time
ago?
But it takes, who knows? You live in an echo chamber with people telling you what you want to hear, and then you ignore the things you don't want to hear. People reinforce that can happen, or you just don't care, right? Because you're the establishment and you see President Trump and the uncouth, barbaric Trumpers coming in and shaking up, getting in the way of your good thing, then you're going to see things differently. So who knows what the percentages are of why people do what they do. But the bottom line is, it's President Trump gives us a chance to crush the Democrats this time around. Without him, we stand a chance of really just dying, not picking up the Senate, possibly losing a lot of houses in this.
Okay. In the little bit of time we have left, Mike, your thoughts on all these indictments and what's going to happen with this?
So the indictments, all of them, in my opinion, are 100% bogus, period.
Well, that's very obvious. But the problem is with Democrat juries and Democrat judges, aren't they going to go through anyway, despite them being bogus?
Unfortunately, we still have idiot Republicans at the top saying, well, let's let the system work it out. So I'm very angry with the National Republicans.
Let's let the crooked system work it out.
Our National Republicans should be saying, we're going to defund Mark Smith, the special prosecutor. They should be defunding things. They should be doing more. That's my thoughts, is we need more from the National Republican Party to really do something rather than expressing
words. The most egregious of all is to try to equate insurrection with doubting an election when the Democrats do nothing but contest. Since 2000, they've done nothing but contest every election that they've ever lost.
I think Trump is going to get through them. I think he will get through them ultimately, but I'm very
angry
with the National Republican Party. And for every Republican that doesn't make this their top issue, the lawfare and turning the legal system to destroy political opponents.
But do you mean he'll get through on appeal or he'll get through in the original
case? I think he will be on the ballot.
Okay, so you're not commenting on whether the indictments will go through. He'll get on the ballot anyway.
He'll be on the ballot. And I think he could still win regardless of some of these indictments, these horrible areas where they're trying him, where everybody hates him.
Okay, so let's say he becomes president and he's in jail. What then? Can he pardon himself?
I don't think that will happen, but I think he'll be able to pardon himself. I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay, folks, on that pleasant, optimistic note, we will see you next time. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
The Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the law offices of Matthew Simone.